Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1818, with a release date of June 15, 2012, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Hams in Colorado and New Mexico go on high alert as wildfires rage in both states. New problems for a South African ham radio satellite. Brunei says it's cracking down on licensed use of ham radio gear. A verdict in the case of Greece versus DJ6SI. And ARRL Field Day 2012 is right around the corner. Find out details right now on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1818, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
Ham radio operators in Colorado and New Mexico are on high alert as wildfires whip across the areas of both states. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in the newsroom with what we have so far.
Amateur radio emergency operators in Colorado and New Mexico are on standby alert, and a number are already involved in coordinated relief efforts as wildfires rage across the mainly wilderness areas of both states. In Colorado, the best information so far came on Tuesday night, the 12th, from Amanda Alden, K1DDN. Alden and her husband Jeff, K0JSC, live in Carson City, Colorado. She reported on the Ham Nation TV show that hams further north in the Fort Collins area are already very much involved in providing various types of communications, with APRS markers for the fire areas being one of the major resources. Alden said that she had been in contact with Eugene Bentz, KI6MPA. He is the EOC operator in Resource Net Control. He told Alden about 25 assistants are providing communications to the Forest Service, the Colorado State Patrol, the Larimer County Sheriff, the Red Cross, as well as several county officials. Also, APRS information regarding the fire locations is being posted to both AGW Tracker and APRS FI. The markers show fire locations as well as EOCs, incident command posts, and shelter markers. At the time of K1DDN's report, the fire was about 15 miles west of the city of Fort Collins. Moving south into New Mexico, Jay Miller, W5WHN in Albuquerque, has been monitoring the work of the hams involved in the Little Bear fire that erupted on Saturday the 9th. He tells Newsline that Joe Kenmore, K5FBK, was in the Lincoln County EOC when the blaze was first discovered. As this newscast is prepared, Gerald Miner, N5RKE, is at the shelter in Ruidoso, and Ed Meyer, WK5ED, is active at the shelter in Capitan. Currently, the W5BI system at Rio Rancho has been used to link the 449.3 frequency to 146.98 on Buck Mountain. This allows Albuquerque and Santa Fe to talk directly to the affected area if needed. Also, the 146.66 MHz NM5ML repeater at Capitan has performed well, linking back to all parts of the state. As we go to air, there has not yet been any mass call out of hams in either state, and amateurs involved in emergency communications groups were told on the 13th not to self-deploy, but the word is to have their go kits ready and be ready to provide assistance as is needed. More information on these fires and the ham radio response as we get it. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in the newsroom in Los Angeles. Jim?
According to fire officials, it'll be some time before these fires are contained and controlled. We'll have updates in future Amateur Radio Newsline reports. More problems for the South Africa-built Sumbandilisat ham radio satellite. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley, KI7UP, tells us the latest on the seemingly problem-prone bird.
South Africa Amstat reports that the batteries on the Sumbandilisat have failed, which means that the satellite is only active when the solar panels are illuminated. The report says that the satellite recovery team at Sun Space is still incrementally reading back the program code from the 9 power modules. This is an effort to determine the extent of the problem. But with Sambalaya Sat going through eclipses, the satellite is not available for as long each day as the team would like. According to Johann Lechter, ZR6CBC, because of the shorter illumination of the solar panels in the southern hemisphere winter and poor orientation of the satellite with respect to the sun, progress is much slower than originally anticipated. Lochner says that there were 3 passes to work with in January, but this month they currently have 1. That said, ZR6CBC says that the Sambalaya Sat is responding when it is in full sunlight. As such, the recovery team is confident that some operations will be restored. He says that it may even be possible to do some imaging and have the amateur radio transponder back in operation. However, no one will speculate as to when. For Amateur Radio Newsline, Norm Seeley, KI7UP in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Updates on the condition of Sumbandilisat can be found online at www.amsatsa.org.za. The Brunei government says it's cracking down on anyone found operating amateur radio gear without government authorization. Members of that nation's citizenry who are convicted of illegal use of amateur radio equipment without a license from the Authority for Info Communications Technology Industry of Brunei, Darussalam, or AITI, will face a maximum fine of 10,000 Brunei dollars, up to 3 years imprisonment or both. This new anti-pirate operating campaign appears aimed primarily at those unlicensed individuals who use mobile gear on the VHF and UHF amateur bands. It was announced by the AITI during a briefing on the first of several joint operations with the Barracas police to crack down on illegal use of radio equipment. The operations involved a dedicated corps of 16 police personnel and 7 AITI officials. A court decision in the case of DXer Baldur Drobnica, DJ6SI, who stood trial last week in Greece on 3 charges involving his operation of an amateur radio station on the vacation island of Kos. The 3 crimes he was eventually charged with were conducting radio traffic without permission from the Greek government, operating a transceiver that covered more spectrum than just a ham radio band permitted by Greece, and his refusal to surrender his equipment to the officer who investigated the incident. According to a note posted on the internet by his attorney, Drobnica was acquitted on counts 1 and 2 after the court ruled that he was a properly licensed amateur radio operator. However, he was convicted on the 3rd count of refusing to surrender his equipment to the arresting officer. No word of what penalties, if any, were imposed on a single count conviction. However, his lawyer is reported to have already filed an appeal on count 3, and the court is expected to hold a separate trial on this issue at a later date. Please keep in mind that this report is based on multiple language translations, beginning in Greek, and some of it is electronic. So, as you all know, the latter have been known to leave you wondering if the translation is completely accurate. One report is translated in English online at tinyurl.com/DJ6SI-verdict. The Federation of Radio Sport of Azerbaijan has applied for International Amateur Radio Union membership. The IARU Region 1 website reports that the application has found to be in order and a proposal that organization be elected as an AIARU member has been put out to the vote. Member societies have requested to return their vote forms not later than November the 1st. The Federation of Radio Sport of Azerbaijan was founded back in December of 2001. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline. Heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WB6VVV repeater serving Lancaster, California. If you're old enough, you may remember the 1970s Bobby Russell Southern folk song titled The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia. Well, this time it wasn't a song, and it took place in Texas when the lights and the air conditioning went out at the Plano Center on Saturday, June the 9th. This during the annual HamCom gathering. Chip Margelli, K7JA of CQ Magazine, was there and gave a brief synopsis of what exactly occurred.
Well, early in the afternoon, the Plano Center, all of a sudden the lights went out. Now, they'd gone out the previous day, stayed off for about 30 seconds, and it was no big deal. But on Saturday, they stayed off for quite a while, and folks that got onto the Internet to the Plano Power Company, whatever it's called, to their website, were told 4 hours for the power to be out. So a lot of exhibitors along about 2 o'clock, 2:30 just started packing up because it appeared that power wasn't going to come back on. It came back on about 3:30 or 4, somewhere in there, but by then a lot of the crowd had gone. So it really was quite an impact. The lights were bad enough, but the lack of air conditioning really impacted everybody's willingness to stay inside.
Unlike most ham radio shows that are full weekend events, HamCom is held Friday and Saturday, and it closes both days at 6 p.m. local time. So even so, K7JA says that it was interesting to have the lights come back on and discover that many of the other exhibitors had already packed up and left, not to mention the attendees.
At the CQ booth, we were quite fortunate because we were by an exit, so there was a little bit of light there. And we were doing candlelight specials to entice people to stop by our booth, but it was definitely a downer for everybody in the exhibit area, the dealers, and especially the manufacturers whose radios are so dependent on the displays now. A lot of the transceiver manufacturers were just stopped dead in the water because they couldn't get their displays to show all the neat things that the radios would do.
At airtime, the reason for the power failure has not been announced. According to Chris Boone, WB5ITT, the outage appeared to affect only the convention facility. In an email to Newsline, Boone said that all the stores around the convention center were okay, and the streetlights still worked as well. A new spectrum-sharing agreement between the United States and Mexico for the 800 megahertz and 1.9 gigahertz band has been negotiated by the FCC. According to a June 11th press release by the FCC, the new 800 megahertz protocol allots band segments between the United States and Mexico. It specifies the technical parameters for operations on these bands within 68 miles of the common border. It also creates a binational task force to support the transition of incumbent operators along the border to the new allotment plan. The new protocol for 800 megahertz replaces a previous agreement that paves the way for completion of 800 megahertz reallocation or rebanding by U.S. public safety and commercial licensees operating along the U.S.-Mexican border. Higher up the frequency, a new protocol for the 1.9 gigahertz band allows the Sprint Nextel Corporation to deploy CDMA service along the border with Mexico. Sprint obtained access to the 1.9 gigahertz band in 2004. This as compensation for vacating its spectrum, holding in the lower segment of the 800 megahertz band in accordance with the rebanding project. The FCC-ordered rebanding will alleviate interference to public safety licensees in the band caused by commercial cellular licensees. The relevant documents are available on the International Bureau website at tinyurl.com/border-agreement. The FCC has ruled that a licensee issued by that agency cannot be used by a local court to satisfy a debt. In its finding, the commission ruled that a court in Puerto Rico exceeded its authority in ordering a broadcaster to turn over the license of WEGAAM to help satisfy a financial judgment. The FCC had been asked to approve the involuntary assignment of the WEGAAM license to Carmelo Santiago Roman, owner of the Vi-Man Broadcasting System Corporation. This after the local court ordered the station owner, A Radio Company, to turn over cash, the license, and other property to a court-appointed holder pending the final court order in their financial dispute. Both sides then presented arguments to the FCC explaining their legal views about the involuntary license transfer. Now, in issuing a decision, Peter Doyle, who is chief of the FCC's Media Bureau Audios Division, said that his agency retains exclusive authority to license broadcast stations. He noted that when a state court's decision is contrary to commission policy, the commission is neither bound by the state court order nor need to take action to allow the order to be carried out. Doyle continued that a license, unlike a station's physical assets, is not subject to a mortgage, security interest, attachment, or similar property right. What's more, licenses are subject to the FCC's consent before any transfer. As such, the decision of the court in Puerto Rico to attach the license of WEGA-AM is invalid from the outset. The worldwide online repeater directory known as R-Finder now supports D-Star. This as a direct result of its editorial staff attending the D-Star Forum at a recent Dayton Hamvention. According to the press release from the publication, it became apparent that there was a lack of D-Star repeater locating options to the vastly growing population of D-Star user base. As a result, as of May 24th, R-Finder fully supports D-Star in the directory. R-Finder is available in the Apple Store for iPhone and Android devices. The web version can be found at www.rfinder.net. The 15th International Earth Moon Earth, or EME, conference will be held at Churchill College, Cambridge, between the 15th and the 19th of August. This is the first time that this conference will be held in the United Kingdom, and its planners say that this will provide an opportunity to learn about this most technically challenging aspect of the hobby. The event will be hosted by UK Microwave Group. In addition to EME-specific lectures, there will be presentations on radio astronomy and deep space communications, as both of these subjects have much in common with EME. Two Nobel Physics laureates from the world of radio astronomy will be present at the conference. Joe Taylor, K1JT, is a keen EME enthusiast and will be presenting a paper on the MAP 65 digital mode. His fellow laureate professor, Anthony Hewish, is the speaker at the conference gala dinner on Saturday night, the 18th. All of those wishing to attend must pre-register for this conference before August the 1st. Day passes and a range of accommodation packages from 1 to 4 nights are available. See www.eme2012.com for full details. Some names in the news. The Dayton Amateur Radio Association, word from Ron Moorfield, W8ILC, that Ron Dubon, N6JRL, has been reelected as the organization's president. This at the organization's meeting on Friday, June the 1st. Also retaining their seat on the DARA board are Secretary Nancy Crodell, KC8RMT, Treasurer John Thurmer, KB8SRQ, Senior Trustee Jerry Miller, WD8QAI, and Junior Trustee Scott Myers, AC8DE. Others elected to the DARA board for 2013 are Vice President Ruben Meeks, WAGUC. Meeks had previously served as Dayton Amateur Radio Association president back in 2001 and 2002. To honor the longtime VHF contester, Eugene Zimmerman, W3ZZ, who became a silent key on June the 3rd, two new awards have been introduced for the ARRL June VHF contest in his memory. First, the ARRL contest branch has renamed the plaque for the overall winner for the limited multi-operator, the Gene Zimmerman W3ZZ Memorial Plaque. Zimmerman had been very active as part of the KAGP team in this category. At the same time, the league issued a special thank you to Jeff Klein, K1TEO, who graciously relinquished his longtime sponsorship of this plaque to allow this to happen. In addition, a new award has been created thanks to Tim Duffy, K3LR, and Dave Zeff, W9ZRX. The W3ZZ Rookie Award will be awarded to the top single-op low-power score on a minimum of 2 bands by a rookie submitting a log in the contest for the first time. This award is open to any operator that has never submitted a log to the June VHF contest. Now, both of these awards were made available beginning with last weekend's ARRL June VHF contest. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org. And being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. For those of you who are not yet aware, the annual ARRL Field Day takes place each year on the fourth weekend of June. This year, the Field Day starts at 1800 UTC on Saturday, June 2nd, and runs through 2100 UTC on Sunday, June 24th. And while it's billed as an emergency preparedness exercise, it's also a great chance for you to tell the world about your hobby and the service it provides to the community. Alan Pitts, W1AGP, is the manager of media and public relations for the ARRL.
It's also a chance for us to show off to various legislators and government agencies to remind them we're here, we need the spectrum, we provide emergency services, and most of all, we have fun doing it.
Again, this year's ARRL Field Day takes place from 1800 UTC on Saturday, June 23rd, and runs through 2100 UTC on Sunday, June 24th. We hope to hear you on the air. Meantime, down under, Australia's winter VHF-UHF Field Day will be held over the same weekend of June the 23rd and 24th. The event runs for 24 hours, but there are also 8-hour sections for operators who may not be able to camp overnight. There are also separate categories for single and multi-operator stations. And if you don't like the cold weather of the Southern Hemisphere winter, there's also a separate home station category. More details are on the contest page at wia.org.au. Turning to ham radio and space-related news, some new amateur radio satellites based on cell phones were recently shown to the public at the 2012 Bay Area Maker Fair in San Mateo, California. Amateur Radio Newsline's Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, reports.
Among the displays was one for the PhoneSat amateur radio satellites. These are a pair of ham radio satellites, both of which run the Android operating system and will be enclosed in a standard 1U CubeSat structure. PhoneSat 1.0 cost about $3,500 and is built around the Nexus One smartphone. It will operate on battery power only with a mission lifetime of approximately 1 week. Its big brother, called PhoneSat 2.0, used a Nexus S smartphone and has solar panels on each face for a mission lifetime that should last at least 2 weeks, when it will likely deorbit. The IARU has coordinated a frequency of 437.425 MHz for the AX.25 AFSK downlink. The first launch is scheduled for the third quarter of 2012 on the Antares 110 launch vehicle. It will carry two PhoneSat 1.0 satellites and one PhoneSat 2.0. A second PhoneSat launch is expected to occur sometime in 2013.
The 2012 Bay Area Maker Fair took place May the 19th to the 20th. Several news reports estimate that 65,000 to 75,000 people attended this ever-growing West Coast event that was held the same weekend as the Dayton Hamvention. The amateur radio on the International Space Station, or ARISS Digipeter, has changed frequency from 145.825 to 437.550. Packet operations were moved to the Columbus Module UHF radio when the Kenwood D700 radio was recently powered off due to needing an additional air purifier to support the recently arrived Automated Transfer Vehicle, or ATV. Now, normally the air purifier is located in the ATV, but recent power support issues necessitated the system be relocated to the service module. As a result, the purifier is now using the power outlet that the Kenwood radio normally uses. The Russian team has agreed to briefly power the purifier off for the scheduled ARISS school events, but then will reactivate the purifier right afterwards. This appears to be a long-term impact, as ATV is currently scheduled to depart from ISS in September. According to Spacecom, NASA has canceled a project to build an X-ray telescope designed to look for black holes, neutron stars, and the remnants of dead star systems and radio the results back to Earth. This due to cost overruns. The GEMS telescope, short for Gravity and Extreme Magnetism Small Explorer, had an estimated budget of $105 million plus additional costs associated with launching it into space. But what has been termed as soaring development costs caused NASA to scrap the project. The telescope was originally reportedly still in the design stage, and no hardware had been built when the space agency pulled the plug on the mission. On the air, keep your ears open for numerous special event stations from the Ukraine and Poland to be active during the 2012 European Football Championship 2012 that runs through July the 5th. This is an on-the-air activity by Polish and Ukrainian amateurs that are affiliated with PZK and UARL national societies and will use special prefixes such as 3Z2012 from Poland and EM2012 from the Ukraine, to mention only two. Operations will be on all the amateur radio bands, and there are two awards which can be earned during this period. More detailed information about their activities can be found on the web at efc2012.pzk.org.pl. In DX, word that F4EBT will be traveling in the French Polynesia area of the Pacific until June the 24th. He's using the call sign F0-F4EBT from at least two different locations in the islands on the air, OC-046 group, and at least four different islands in the OC-067 group. QSLs go via his home call sign or via the French Bureau. NK80 is working at Mwanza on Lake Victoria, Tanzania, and plans to be active as 5H3CP through June 22nd. Activity will be in his spare time with QRP power on various HF bands using CW. QSL direct to his home call sign. Lastly, M0AEP, under the call sign of VP2MDD, will be on the air from Montserrat until August the 6th. He says he'll concentrate on 12, 10, and 6 meters. Please QSL this operation as directed on the air. Finally, this week, a large number of presentations at the recent National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters meeting centered on the idea of how shortwave radio can find a place in the 21st century. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Butera Howell, KB3TZD, has the details.
Dismissed by some as a relic of the Cold War era disappearing under the shadow of emerging digital communications, many of the conference's speakers argued that the answer to shortwave's future may reside in providing service to areas of the world with little electric power. Also, that it remains an effective means of relaying information to citizens of countries with repressive regimes. It was noted that because shortwave radio is harder to interrupt than the Internet, the conference host, Radio Free Asia, broadcasts to highly censored areas like North Korea. Presenting the results of a study on which audiences were tuning into shortwave across the globe was Dr. Kim Andrew Elliott. Elliott is an audience research specialist. He pointed out that in countries like Nigeria and Zimbabwe, people tended to own more radios than televisions. According to Elliott, 32% of those surveyed face-to-face in the impoverished, politically tumultuous nation of Zimbabwe said that they own shortwave radios. Another presenter was Thomas Witherspoon, who founded Ears to Our World. This is a U.S.-based nonprofit organization that supplies shortwave radios to developing, conflict-riddled nations like South Sudan. Witherspoon said he is skeptical when people dismiss shortwave radio's future on premises like the Internet is everywhere. Witherspoon says that we can look at the reasons why radio is on the decline, or instead, the ways we can invest in shortwave radio and why we should do that. He says that it's affordable and broadcasters are doing it pretty efficiently. One of the conference's attendees was Shanaz Ghavami of the United States FCC. She said that after spending the day with the international broadcasters, it makes you think about shortwave as something new. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Butera Howell, KB3TZD, in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
The National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters meeting was held May the 10th and the 11th in Washington, D.C. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, and Australia's WIA News. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@newsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2012. All rights are reserved.